and we can love. So fear is not, as the saying, you know, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. That's a misstatement.
So don't fear fear.
Don't fear fear. Welcome it as a natural part of the human condition and know that you can transform it into a tremendous, tremendously powerful thing, which we call love. Mm.
Does that resonate with you, Emily? And you write these wonderful songs which are full of fear and emotion and grace.
Very much so. I think this idea of taking potentially negative feelings or events that happen to you and being able to transform them into positive outcomes is an incredibly powerful thing. And, you know, quite often your first reaction when something terrible's happened is to just sort of curl up and not be able to face the world. But I found in my own experience when times have been tough that out of that has come a new song or some new experience or as Paul was saying, that you learn from it. So you can always transform it in some way.
You're also touring at the moment. This fourth album, this amazing sort of crowd-financed one, Bird Inside a Cage. Do you enjoy the touring? I was reading some of your journals in your book. There seem to be moments of intense panic and misery.
I think when you're a live performer, there are quite often moments of intense panic and misery. But but generally speaking, I love it, which is a big step forward, because when I first started writing songs, I was actually writing in my bedroom for quite a few years with no intention of ever performing them, because the idea of standing up on stage and singing something that I'd written was a bit akin to standing up and taking all my clothes off. That's what it sort of felt like. So it took me a long time to be able to get up on stage and perform. So
let's hear a little bit of the title track, Bird Inside a Cage.
Such a willful child, always wanted to be wild. Never thought I'd ever be a bird inside a cage. But fate is such a funny way of devastating any day. And before you know it, you're in over your head. But it's love that saves us when all else has failed us, when you just can't take another day. Now I've cried countless tears, faced my biggest fears. There's nowhere to go when you can't get out of bed. And if I could change
the... That's beautiful. It's a particular inspiration for that song, wasn't there? A particular person?
Yes, it was. I read an article in the Times magazine by a woman called Melanie Reed, who had been paralysed in a horse riding accident a couple of years before. And this article was all about her first year in a wheelchair. And I was so moved and inspired by what she wrote that I wrote this song for her. And my manager sent it to her and she
loved it.
She gave it her blessing. So it's now the title track of my new album.
In your book, Start Over Again, it's a collection of writings and journals and lyrics and thoughts. You're very open about your bipolar condition because you were diagnosed you were ill very young, weren't you?
Really? I was ill very young with it. But when I started doing music and I was doing gigs and touring with some quite big acts, and my manager, who I told about it, he said, I think we better keep that quiet for the moment.
People are always worried you won't turn up.
Well,
if there's anything.
I think also there was still quite a stigma about mental illness, and campaigns like Time to Change were only just sort of beginning at that time. And in 2010, I had a single on Radio 2. I was doing a tour of Cafe Nero's as Artist of the Month, and I was having another depressive episode at the same time. And I'd literally put my makeup on, go out and do a gig, come home, the crisis team would come round, give me lots of drugs, I'd go back out, do another gig. And I just thought, I can't do this, I can't hide anymore, this is ridiculous. I would much rather not be adding to the stigma of mental illness by not talking about my own. So in true dramatic style, I wrote this book and put it all in there. And
I mean, everything. I mean, the misery of trying to have a baby and miscarrying a baby and thinking you'd have to come off the psychiatric drugs if you're going to get pregnant.
Exactly, yeah.
Really harsh things. But was it a kind of relief? Just putting it out there and saying, what the hell, this is who I am.
It was amazing. The book was actually launched on Radio 2, and the programme that broadcast it were inundated with messages from people. And I was inundated with messages from people. And most of them said, you're so brave. And the thing was, is that I didn't feel brave. I just felt completely liberated. I could now talk about it. People could understand where these songs were coming from. And I even went and did some gigs in some psychiatric hospitals and daycare centres, and the response from people was just amazing.
The great thing is that in between all the miseries, there's these great shafts of light and vision. There's one short poem I love, which actually it relates a bit to what Paul Michael Glaser was saying about being out of control and accepting helplessness, called Impermanence, where you say, do I want the sea made out of concrete, the sky pinned up, clouds nailed down and the leaves glued to the trees? It's a great thought, isn't it?
Mm.
It's one of the great thoughts of all time, that.
Well, I practiced Buddhism for a long time, and one of the things that you're taught in Buddhism is about the nature of impermanence. You know, everything, things change. And that's something, as someone with bipolar disorder, I have to really hang on to, because the ups and the downs continue. There is no end in sight. There is no particular cure. But what I've realised is that if I didn't go through these times, if I didn't have the depression, then I wouldn't be able to write about it. And if I didn't write about it, then people wouldn't be able to hear it. And there's something in the words and the music of a song where you can express very deep feelings that people sometimes find very hard to put into words. And that's the power in it.
Now, you fled these islands for quite a time to live, I'm told, in Australia with a python and a piano full of mice and walls made of potato sacks, it says here.
Yes.
And made your life on making goat's cheese.
I did.
Is this true? This sounds, it's too good. A record company has to have made this one up.
No, it was absolutely true. I went out to Australia for a 3-week holiday to visit a very old friend. And he'd just built his own house on his mother's farm, and he didn't have any money, so he got some tree trunks and a second-hand tin roof, needed to build some walls, so he went to the local shop and got some potato sacks and rendered them and made this beautiful house. And I arrived, having been living in Camden, you know, with sirens everywhere and traffic lights and concrete and people everywhere, and I just actually had a very big breakdown. I'd been hospitalised a few months before, so I went out to Australia in a very fragile state of mind, not sure what I was going to do with my life, and I was supposed to be coming back to London and getting a proper job and starting my life, and instead my friend said to me, how about you stay and we make a record? And so we made my first album, and then the cheese making came out of that, because we needed to finance it. And his mum had this goat farm, and she was a very well-known cheesemaker in Australia, so she initiated me in the sacred art of cheesemaking.
Are you good at it? Could you still make it?
Well, that's the thing. I'm an absolutely hopeless cook, but I'm a very good cheesemaker. And the reason being is that you have to be very pedantic to make good cheese, and I'm a great perfectionist. So I'd spend part of the week stirring milk and cutting curd in the cheese room, and the rest of the week running our record label, booking gigs and writing songs. And it was, and with my huge veggie garden and dingoes in the hills around us and wallabies in the garden, it was the most amazing experience.
So do you feel is that home now, or are you back in Camden?
Well, I'm not back in, after living out in the bush for 4 years, I couldn't deal with London at all. So when it turned out that we were going to have to stay, because the music business is basically here, we moved down to Bath. So I wanted to be somewhere small and beautiful. But we are going back to Australia in December, and we've got our shack is still there, the roof's still on, the mice are still there,
python's still there.
Hopefully, it hasn't burned down.
No, well, yeah, exactly. We're a bit far north from there, but. Yeah.
Just finally, one thing that struck me, it was that in among your own writing in the book, suddenly you reproduce not a modern poem about depression or self-discovery or Buddhism, but a heroic Victorian poem by William Ernest Henley. Invictus, and he was a wonderful guy. He lost his daughter in childhood. He had TB, he had his foot amputated, and whatever. Well, you pick up Invictus as your poem. Isn't that great?
I think it just sums up to me completely the courage that human beings have in the face of great adversity. I found it incredibly inspiring.
Will you read it to us?
Out of the night that covers me, black as a pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody, but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how strait the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul.
Isn't that just such a beautiful, great Victorian sentiment? Master of fate, captain of soul. Some of us learned it at school, you see, and nobody does now, so they all should. It leads us on nicely to Harry Ritchie, author, once literary editor of the Sunday Times, author of English for the Natives on the unfashionable topic of English grammar and how it works.